Hello, everybody. Hello, Knicks fans. Welcome to episode 48 of the Worldwide Knicks Podcast, where for probably maybe the second time this season, this is a happy episode. You know, it's a happy episode because the team is coming off a bunch of wins. Omar here alongside Alex and Rafa. Guys, how are we doing tonight?
I'm good, thanks, Omar. I thought you were going to say the second time this season that I've managed to log in and turn up to this podcast. It feels like I've missed quite a few recently.
Me too. I thought about it as well.
You're like Kawhi Leonard, man. You got a little load management going on. That's okay. You know, yeah. No worries.
Although, at least we don't have the lunatics taking over the asylum like was potentially going to happen earlier, where you were going to take the night off, Omar. Let me and Rafa run.
One of these days, I'm just going to orchestrate that just to see what the result would be like without me on here. Because, you know, we've had episodes without Rafa, we have episodes without Alex, but I've been on every single episode, basically, you know. So it would be interesting, I think, to see what that would look like. I don't know, I think it'd be fun to be a rant fest with you guys without me saying, all right, let's rein it back in. You
know? Three hours in.
Yeah, you know, 3 a.m. Guys, have you? Can you send me the file? Oh, we're not done yet.
Oh my gosh! So looking at this past week, guys, it's been a good one. The team's won 4 games in a row. They had a 3-0 week, wins against the Hawks, Hornets, and Kings. Rafa had that one right exactly in our prediction segment last week. Really, teams look really good. I think with the exception of the Hornets game, every single game they've held opponents under 100 points in this stretch. You know, the defense has been better. The play of their main players has mostly been better. You know, RJ has come along. Randall has had, I think, 3 of his last 6 games. He scored over 30 points. Brunson's had a couple off nights, but still, you know, doing what he does. So it's all been kind of blue skies this past week. And a big part of that is this change in the rotation. You know, Tibbs is no stranger to a 9-man rotation. You know, we've seen it before. And he's done it again with a 9-man lineup. This time he's benched Derrick Rose and Cam Reddish, in addition to having already benched Evan Fournier. And this has given an opportunity for Quentin Grimes to be in the starting lineup permanently and for Deuce McBride to get meaningful minutes. He's kind of the first guy off the bench now, even before Quickly. So, I mean, it's led to a 4-game winning streak, right? So it must be working in some way, shape, or form. So I guess, is this kind of like a winning formula? Or we got maybe a little flash in the pan going on right now?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I've been joking with you guys today about, you know, Tibbs' apology episode, but, you know, I'm well accustomed to the fact that, you know, there's always a drama, there's always a crisis coming around the corner with the Knicks that, you know, never get too high, never get too low. It's why that, you know, I wasn't freaking out when things were going bad. It's just the way the Knicks are, and as I say, you just have to keep that kind of, you have to keep that calm, that kind of patience with them a little bit. So I'm fully, you know, expecting, you know, to turn the other way at some point. But it's been so nice to see, you know, anybody that's a fan of playing good defense is, you know, can't help but get a bit overexcited this week. You know, it's all the kind of 90-point games and things like that.
You know, real quick, Alex, about that, I think it's funny. I think, like, Knicks fans as a whole, they love that more than, like, scoring 120, 130 points and out. They love this whole, like Deuce McBride is, like, a Knicks fan's wet dream. You know, like, this guy is all intensity, all defense, pick you up 90 feet. The whole thing. I think they would much prefer that to, say, like a run and gun style, 7 seconds or less, Phoenix Suns from definitely back in the day situation. So, yeah, I think fans should be loving this and probably taking a little bit of a victory lap because they've been calling for reduced minutes for quite a while now.
Well, I mean, he's been the big surprise for me this week. You know, I mean, we've talked a lot about, is he an NBA player? I mean, he's doing great things in the G League, but it's not really enough. You know, his shot is still looks pretty terrible, but
it makes you wonder if he has a Pat Beverly ceiling, right? Like, that's kind of like what it looks like, you know, high intensity defensive player. Maybe, you know, the offense comes around, maybe it doesn't, but you know, that seems to be the trajectory.
Or Frank Ntilikina.
Isn't that awesome? I mean, isn't that awesome if you have that type of guy on your squad? Like,
oh yeah, yeah, it's a great
trying
thing
to win a title once, Beverly. I mean, it's a great defensive guy. He got he who can shoot a three. I mean, he can shoot it. It's the shot isn't falling. He's still too tentative with the offense. But if you have guys going off on offense, you don't need that 15 points per game from Deuce McBride. If you have six or seven or eight, it's great. Mm-hmm. Like, looking back at what we had from Reggie Bullock, was a spot-up shooter playing defense, the best defender we had. So if he's playing defense and can hit a couple of threes, well, that's good. That's awesome. So players don't need to be all superstars or stars or being all stars to be pretty good on a team. And Deuce can be pretty good on the team. Not Frank Ntilikina.
That's a great point, Rafa. And it's what I love about Grimes so much is that, you know, you don't need him to do, you don't need him on the ball. You know, you can play off ball. You can sit in the corner. You can shoot threes. And then on the defensive end, he's just all action. You know, we talked a lot about, you know, if Donovan Mitchell came in, you know, you'd have him, Randall, Brunson, RJ, you know, all needing the ball. There wasn't that kind of complementary player that does all the dirty work and just, you know, you don't need to get the ball, you know. So RJ, Brunson, and Randall can share the ball now, knowing that, you know, you've got Mitch, you've got Grimes that can back them up and cover for them. Don't need the ball to be successful. And, you know, it's just a much more balanced team, Juice and certainly Grimes in there. So
imagine if you're another team, you're going in to play the Knicks and you're a backcourt player and you're looking at the specter of 20 minutes of Deuce McBride in your grill and then another 30 minutes of Quentin Grimes in your grill. I mean, that just got to be annoying. You know, it's like these guys are just pests defensively and, you know, Thibodeau's giving them, letting them run. And, you know, so now the calculus when you're another team coming into New York is a lot different. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm going up against Evan Fournier, I should get an easy 25 tonight, right? It's oh more so. I'm no disrespect to Evan. He's a great offensive player, but he sucks defensively. We know this, you know, even like when he's at his element in FIBA, he's not really great defensively. He's just not a defensive player. And whereas like McBride is just like, he's a pest. You know, he's just all up in your face. And he's going to pick you up. Grimes is the same way. He's going to take the assignment of the best wing player, and which, again, to I'm sure the point you're probably thinking about, Rafa, helps out RJ because, you know, now he doesn't have the 48-minute obligation to guard that wing player all the time. You have somebody like Grimes who come in on the switch and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think it's been a huge revelation for, you know, what this team is defensively, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was thinking about it, I saw it as well, because we've mentioned so many times how RJ is a guy who, when the game isn't defensively, is not playing well, offensively you see him drop, or vice versa, offensively is not going as well, defensively he falters a bit. So him having guys to help him out or take the majority of the load defensively helps them out offensively as well. So, and having guys like McBride and Grimes who can play off ball and shoot the three has helped not only RJ, but Randall as well tremendously.
Oh, yeah.
They're able to go inside and kick it out. And the ball movement they have around the wing, if it's RJ shooting or passing the ball, Grimes, Deuce as well, quickly if he's out there. Even Hardenstein is shooting, shot a couple of threes. I don't think he hit no one, but what else? Whatever. I liked what I saw from Deuce McBride in a way that I think, okay, he might not be better than Grimes one-on-one defense, but he brings to me, from what I see, maybe I'm seeing this all wrong, he brings more to team defense than just Grimes. Deuce is a pest on-ball defense and off-ball defense. He's much lateral quickness is much, he's all over the place. There's a play in the fourth quarter, tremendous fourth quarter from this unit in this last game against the Kings plus refs. It was a play, he was guarding the guy with the ball. He started guarding off ball and he fought for the rebound. He was everywhere. And that's what the team needed as well. His energy out there defensively, I think, brings everyone else together.
That's a great point, Rafa. Like, you're seeing it in RJ. You're seeing the way Randall's rebounding the ball now. You're seeing it the way Mitch is defending the rim. I really think it's a combination of Deuce and Grimes. You know, those two guys have really kind of energized it, and the team defense has improved. Yeah, they're still giving up a few open looks in the corners, you know, and that's still happening. But overall, like, they are switching faster. The lateral quickness is better. There are a lot fewer of those "what the hell are you doing" lack of effort plays. Like, Randall's had a couple over the pit this week. RJ had a couple as well, where you're kind of like, what are you doing there? But by and large, I mean, the results speak for themselves. You're holding teams under 100 points. And, you know, I think these two guys are the catalyst. But I guess beyond those two guys, who are we also looking at as somebody who's kind of impressed us in this stretch? You know, obviously we talked a lot just now about Grimes and Deuce, but I mean, is there anybody else that you've been kind of pleasantly surprised with this past week?
Mitch, for me, has actually been a real surprise for me. I've mentioned many times, I'm not his biggest fan, but I think he's looked great. You know, he's looking really strong, good positionally. I know he got in foul trouble the other night, but as Rafa kind of hinted at, some of the calls were ridiculous, you know, but he's, yeah, sometimes he just lacks that kind of awareness and smartness to kind of, right, okay, the game's getting...
Like, he's a top five offensive rebounder at this point, right, in the league?
Oh,
like,
sure, yeah.
He's got to be in the top. So, I mean, the way he's saved possessions has been incredible, but yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying he just sometimes lacks that bit of smarts, you know, like, you know, when the refs are calling a game a certain way, he's just got to put a lid on it a little bit and just realize that he can't just try and block everything, or he's just got, you know, stay on his feet and just kind of stop fouling, you know. But I mean, he's improved hugely in that respect. It's nothing like what it was a couple of years ago, but still he is getting there. You know, he's still lacking a few basic center skills, but, you know, huge improvement.
I guess to that point, Alex, like, what center skills are you looking for him to improve upon specifically, just out of curiosity?
Well, just kind of any kind of post game, and you know, he's still not great at setting screens, you know, and defensive rebounding, again, I've mentioned it loads, but he's got to do better there, you know. And
I
know he's got to get up the floor to kind of, you know, look for alley-oops or whatever, but I think at first, you know, that's his role, you know. He's got to be better at boxing out, he's got to be better at kind of grabbing defensive rebounds. So
something I've noticed about him when it comes to the defensive rebounding thing is I feel like he's always so focused on getting the block, you know, like being the rim protector that Tibbs wants him to be. So a lot of times he'll jump in the air, you know, and he doesn't have that recovery jump like Jericho Sims does, right? So he's like, so he kind of gets caught on those moments. But definitely, you know, somewhere for him to improve. I mean, he's averaging 4 defensive rebounds a year this year, which is almost his career low, which was his rookie year. So, I mean, he's never been a great defensive rebounder, but you would like to see that number closer to 6 or 7, I would say, right? Just a couple more per night, and then you'd be in a good spot. What you got, Rafa?
I was going to say that defense. Well, you said it well with the rim protector thing. He and it doesn't help. Or didn't help that our defense, our perimeter defense, was atrocious. Like, they were getting blown by every couple of plays, and Mitch had to protect the paint. And so if he's jumping to a shot to block, try and protect the paint, block the shot, he can't jump to rebound the ball as well. So I think defensive rebounding is more of a team effort as well. Twitter talked about it as the box out. It's something that doesn't happen. Is it RJ? Is it Randall? Is it Obi or whatever? The team effort, defensive rebound. They don't get. Mitch has their back defending, protecting the paint. They don't have Mitch's back on defensive rebounds. I think it's more of a team issue as well, not only a Mitch thing. Right. But I think these last couple of games, with the rotation changes, has improved a little bit on that regard, because again, perimeter the defense has improved, so he doesn't need to just chase people in the paint. He can just be the presence there and can grab a couple more rebounds. I don't know the numbers, but it seemed that way that he was more focused on getting rebounds on defense as well, even if he didn't get them, because quickly grabs a few. Randall and RJ is grabbing a couple of more, I think so too. He's focusing more on that.
Yeah.
Maybe because he's playing the four now for some reason. But yeah, Mitch has been a pleasant surprise for these couple of games. He got injured. Everybody, okay, he's injured again. He's coming back, needs to rehab it or something. But no, he came out of that injury just booming. I mean, everything worked perfectly this week for Tibbs. The rotation changes, adding Deuce was the last chance probably, and it worked perfectly to perfection. No excuse, no nothing to say here. But everything clicked to perfection this week. Deuce and Grimes stepped up. Grimes played 42 minutes last game, 41, or against the Hornets, I think it was. Or was it against the Kings? RJ with 42 and him with 30, 41.
Yeah, against the Kings, yeah.
Effect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the Kings. Like, Grimes playing much better. Deuce entered the lineup perfectly. Randall, he was all-star Randall. The last game again, these last two games, but then against the Kings, he was all-star Randall and last year's Randall as well. I loved it.
It's my RJ guy right there, man.
As well. Dude, it's a roller coaster. It's like the Knicks. And RJ improved as well. And perfect timing. Brunson, you said it on top of the show. Brunson hasn't been dropping 30 points a night, but he had, what, 11 assists? A couple of.
He's still impacting the game.
He's impacting the game in other ways. What we wanted from a point guard. So it's pretty awesome. He's still able to do that. So everything clicked perfectly for Tibbs this week. He must be sweating bullets when he Drews is coming in. Cam, Rose are out of the lineup. I hope this fucking works, dude.
Yeah, the thing to me that really sticks out on top of the Deuce and Grimes thing is you know, you mentioned Randall and you mentioned RJ. That's the two. Those are the two that really stick out to me. Like, Randall, like, I hate to sound so derivative and just so vague about it, but it literally looks like he's having fun on the court again. Like, he's, you know, high-fiving teammates more. He's you know, smiling after things happen. He's scoring at will, basically, this past 5-6 games. And, yeah, he had the, you know, the moment where his emotions got the best of him yesterday against Sacramento, got tossed with a double tech. But ultimately, I mean, that doesn't bother me personally. That's Julius Randle. You know, he's gonna get fired up. You know, when the calls don't go his way, he just has to rein it in a little bit, obviously. But one thing I really saw from him that I really enjoyed was in the Kings game in the first half, they were doubling him a lot. If you guys noticed at the top of the key, and he was able to find RJ for that little in the paint floater shot, and it worked like two or three times, and he's moving the ball willingly. He's doing a bunch of stuff here that really is great team basketball. And yes, he's still shooting a lot, but I feel like he's taking good shots. He's passing out of the shots when he needs to. And I think he's been playing great. And, you know, it's annoying to me. Obviously, Randall has one good game or a few good games, and everybody's like, oh, keep on boosting that trade value so we can get rid of you at the deadline, you know? And I'm just like, why you just want to get rid of somebody who's routinely dropping 30 and winning? Like, it's not like a Jalen Green situation where he's dropping 30, but they're losing by 20 every night. You know, they're winning games with him performing well, and it's rubbing off on RJ, and it's rubbing off on the role players as well. So, you know, it seems like they got something going here, but that leads me to somebody who's not playing, which is Cam Reddish. So it's been such a weird season for him, right, guys? Like, he was like, oh, this is his last shot or whatever, changed his number, the whole thing. And then, like, at the beginning of the year, you know, it's like, oh, man, we're wrong about this guy. This guy looks like he might have the goods, you know? And then he kind of starts slumping down and downwards again, and now he's out of the rotation. And there's a lot of talk that he's officially requested a trade. Can't say I blame him. If you're a young guy in a contract year, you're not even hitting the floor, you probably want to go somewhere where you could get that next contract. So I guess I think it's an inevitability that he's going to be traded, right? But I guess, what do you guys think is the ask price here? A lot of rumors saying it's a second round pick or maybe an expiring rookie contract. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I would say that's about the right price. I mean, I think with Cam, it's obviously frustrating about the way it's gone. And I've said before that there is a role for him in the team. I didn't understand that quote, of like Tibbs said, about, you know, about not finding a role with the team, because we don't have a kind of proper backup at the three spot, you know. And you saw last night RJ playing 42 minutes, you know, and it's the spot's obviously open for him, especially with Obi being down, that there should be minutes for him there. I mean, I can only put it down to the fact that clearly, you know, Tibbs has never been really enamored with him at all from the beginning. I know he's got his defensive talent, which you would think, oh yeah, Tibbs will love that, and he's got all the potential in the world, as everybody always says. But there must be just a real lack of you know, effort, especially in practice.
Yeah, that's gotta be it.
I mean, Hawks fans said it, you know, that he's supposedly lazy in practice, you know, and just has that kind of poor attitude. And that is the complete antithesis of a player that Tibbs would want on his team. So, you know, Tibbs wants these guys that are in there till, you know, all hours, just in the gym, working on the shot, working on the game. And I just don't think Cam's got that. And for all the talent, you can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't have that kind of hard work attitude, then you're not going to make it with a Tibbs team. And I think that's just run its course. And I think he must have just seen it one too many times in practice and just thought, no, this is, you know, we gave you your chance. And you've just not shown it consistently enough. So, and I think him and I can guess Rose as well must be getting held out for trades. They can only think, was it the 15th that the trade market opens up a little bit? So
mm-hmm.
You know, maybe there's something there that they're just kind of keeping them away from injury until there's something maybe brewing from that side of things. So
it didn't work out for him. Clearly, it was never meant to be with the Knicks here. Maybe his work ethic didn't face Tibbs, like Alex mentioned as well. It is his work ethic. I mean, he's talented. You saw flashes in his defense. He was being one of the best defenders on the team at some point. I don't think he was a problem on the team, to be honest. I think he was a sacrificing pawn to shorten the rotation and get another defensive guard to help out. Because Quickly wasn't doing a tremendous job defensively as well. And so he's being helped as well with Deuce coming up. So he clearly wasn't the problem. So, you know, the second round pick is kind of, I don't know. But I don't know if you guys saw I was just checking it. There's a few reports from Shams. So probably true that the Lakers are contacting the Knicks about getting Cam Reddish and Evan Fournier. So
for who?
That's probably, I mean, talking about a three-team deal, and probably we'll get a pick or two picks for Evan.
Like, is this a Westbrook buyout situation? I mean,
I don't think so. I think the Lakers want someone to save their season, players right, to bolster their roster, basically. Mm-hmm. So they talk about wanting Bogdanović from Detroit and Jay Crowder. And
That Bogdanović one was weird. Didn't he just re-sign with the Pistons after the trade? Like, why would they get rid of him?
I don't know. It's the Lakers, so they can make it happen. I don't know, man.
Yeah,
I have no clue. But
that's true. That's true.
It's a possibility that I will see, because people don't look as Cam as damaged. Oh, serviceable player. He can play some defense. He can give us a few flashes. Maybe he still finds a role in this league. I sincerely hope so. And I mean, Fournier can help a team just if they just want a shooter. If he accepted the role of being a bench player instead of a starter, he can help out. And maybe like the Lakers, because there's been interest. The Lakers have been interested in him before. It's not something new with Cam Reddish. So maybe that's the way we to attach him. And Rose, if we trade Rose, because I believe he wants to play, right? He slimmed down for Tibbs to play, and now he's not playing, which is kind of weird. And I can see to just we just letting Rose walk or trading him to whatever he wants to play, even if it's Chicago or something. Just let him go, even if he goes to a Eastern Conference contender, basically with us to the playoff spot.
The weird thing is you mentioned the Lakers, and I'm like looking at their roster, like, who do we even want that's on this team?
Oh, no one. They're trash.
Kendrick Nunn, was he not?
Yeah, he's still there. I mean, like, we don't want him. I mean,
he's
like,
probably like they get Westbrook somewhere else. Like, it's a three-team deal. Westbrook goes somewhere else.
So it has
and
to
we
be
get
picks, right?
Picks or someone. Picks, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we want all the picks. We want all the picks.
On Rose, like, absolutely love Derrick Rose, and I'm pretty gutted as to how this season's. I was actually really looking forward to him back healthy again, and thought he was going to be a huge part of the team this year. And
pretty bad, to be honest.
He has been pretty bad, yeah. Like, I don't know what's up with him. Surely it can't just be the weight loss. I don't know if there's something else going on. Maybe the surgery hasn't quite worked out as he hoped. Yeah, I think it's time for him to go back to Chicago and just see out his career, and especially with so many injuries with Lonzo, you would think that would be the obvious move for them. But he's still in a pretty big deal. I don't know.
I'm looking at this guy's like they're gonna probably try and get like a second round pick for him, for Cam. You know, assuming it's not a big three team deal like you alluded to, Rafa, with a contender or somebody trying to get him in to bolster their roster. Yeah, I think ultimately the Knicks, you know, kind of took a swing at it, see what he had, and yeah, ultimately it was a low risk maneuver for the team. You know, you got rid of Kevin Knox, you know, who you weren't going to re-sign anyway. And, you know, and this experiment ultimately hasn't really worked. You know, I kind of wonder if they did it to begin with just to kind of appease RJ, you know, and maybe this was kind of like, hey, we brought your guy from college. And, you know, if that was a thing, if that was like a part of the thought process. But, you know, I guess looking back at the trade in retrospect, it was kind of a nothing trade for us. You know, it's like you get rid of Knox and you bring in this guy, and he kind of is better than Knox, but not enough to, you know, maintain a spot in the rotation. And, you know, it's unfortunate because I feel like, I don't know, maybe you guys feel differently, but I think this team is really addicted to winning the trade, you know? Like, they really want to be the favorable one on any deal. And I think ultimately that's why the Donovan Mitchell trade didn't happen, you know, because they didn't want to be look like they were getting housed on picks from Utah and things of that nature. And, you know, this Cam trade is kind of like a smaller version of that, where they want to show like, hey, look at us. We just acquired a promising lottery pick, a guy who was like one of the top players coming out of high school, you know, just a few years ago. And look, all we had to give up is, you know, the remains of Kevin Knox for him, you know, and, you know, it hasn't really worked, you know, nothing's really happened. And
yeah, everybody keeps going on about that first round pick, which very, very unlikely to be a first round pick. And remember the Hawks, you know, let Knox walk as well. So they've got nothing in return for Knox. So it's just that first round pick that's probably likely to be conveyed to a second round pick or two second round picks in the future. So, you know, it's as you said, it's a pretty nothing deal. It was a pretty much a free swing, I think.
Yeah, and you know, you guys were talking about Rose and potentially Fournier in addition to Cam, you know, kind of getting moved here as that 15th comes and eventually as a deadline creeps closer. And, you know, Rafa, before we got on, you kind of had alluded to people talking about a Kyle Kuzma trade. I guess, like, what, which I don't think is going to happen, by the way, guys. That's, yeah, that's not, they're not trading for Kyle Kuzma. It's, come on. But I guess, like, from your perspective, what kind of deal should they be looking for? Whether it's trading these guys or maybe something else, I mean, should they just be looking for more draft picks? Should they try to get players in? I mean, what direction do you think they should go with trading these guys?
Well, I don't mean to bang on about it, but yeah, somebody that can play not just the three, but multiple positions. I don't think there's enough players in the roster that can be adaptable. Talked before about Randall and Obi, you know, can only really play one position. RJ is quite a kind of, you know, flexible player. He's certainly playing the four recently as well. But even Hartenstein and Mitch, you know, you kind of watch through your fingers when Hartenstein's playing the four recently. The guards as well. They've had McBride playing the three at some points as well. Just been a bit strange. Yeah, so especially on the wings, just somebody a bit more adaptable, maybe somebody that's not going to come in and just compliment RJ a little bit. So kind of defensive minded, I would think, at the wing spot.
I would look at a guy at the power forward position that, I mean, not getting a lot of minutes, of course, or if any, just situational maybe, that can lock down on defense as well. Like, because if Mitch is not on the floor, we don't have that. Artenstein is not that guy. So even if you have Artenstein there and you can have another guy, or you move Obi into the, or movie out Obi out there or something, another big who can play a little bit more of a defensive game in the team. I mean, if he's not in the rotation, because I don't think we're getting players to be in the rotation. I think if the rotation was shortened and it's working, if only someone really special would crack that rotation again. So I don't know, could it be not Kyle fucking Kuzma, obviously. I think it's one of the dumbest things I've heard. I've read on Twitter the last couple of.
Let me throw a name at you guys. He seems to have fallen out of favor with his team. Small forward, you know, but maybe a little undersized. But Jayshon Tate in Houston, real young player. He's kind of been eligible to come back from injury for like a week now, but they really haven't played him. Makes me wonder if they have a trade lined up. Same thing like you guys are mentioning about not risking another injury. You know, and you talk about wing depth. And I wonder, like, is that the type of deal that we should be looking at, as opposed to, like, say whatever you want about Kyle Kuzma. That still is a kind of a big deal because, you know, he's probably the third option on the team in Washington there behind Beal and Porzingis. And, you know, it's just, I think that's kind of what you're looking for. Maybe like that wing player that could kind of spell RJ, that kind of gets the rotation back to 10. And if not that, then you're looking you're acquiring picks, you know, because I don't think the team has the capital to make a big trade now. Plus, these big trades rarely happen in the middle of the season anyway. A lot of times those are kind of like off-season acquisitions, right? But just kind of retrospecting a little bit on the Derrick Rose stuff, you know, like a Chicago reunion almost kind of feels inevitable for him. You know, like, go back to where it started, back to where he's from, obviously. I don't know what that trade looks like. I wonder if it involves Patrick Williams, because a lot of talk about him kind of being on the way out in Chicago. They're kind of disappointed with his output. And, you know, Patrick Williams, excellent defensive player. You know, try and tell me that Tibbs wouldn't like having that guy on his team. I'm sure he would, you know. So, I think that could be something to monitor. To me, the one that becomes hard is Evan. Like, what do you do with Evan Fournier? Is like, if the trade deadline comes and goes, he's still on this team. Like, what happens then, you know? And, you know, he's been kind of like a good soldier about it. But, you know, there have been a couple comments here, a couple comments there, you know, and ultimately this guy is still in his prime and he wants to play, you know? So, you know, I wonder, like, you could see somebody taking a chance on Cam, expiring contract. He's probably the most tradable, because he's on a rookie deal and it's expiring. Rose is probably tradable just because from a point guard depth perspective. But Evan, you know, the number's kind of big and he doesn't really play defense. And, you know, he's been out of the rotation for a while now. So it's not really like he has a chance to audition for anybody. So I kind of wonder what that trade looks like. I guess, what do you guys see him moving at any point this season?
Yeah, just back on, you said Jayshon just when you said Jay, I thought you were going to say Jay Crowder. So I know he's been bandied about as well. again, he's more of a kind of a guy you want in a contender, though, isn't he? Like like a PJ Tucker type, you know, that you just
That's somebody like Boston or somebody will go after. Milwaukee will go after, you know, that kind of thing.
But on Fournier, it's kind of sad the way it's ending, isn't it? Especially after the season he had last year, obviously breaking the record for 3 points. And on a team that can't shoot for shit from three, do you know, they're sitting the guy that's got the 3-point record on.
Funny how that works.
Not playing him at all. You know, there's something kind of just comical about it, but. Yeah, I mean, he obviously has his flaws, and we've been calling for a while about, you know, playing him as just a kind of sharpshooter off the bench, you know. But again, he just doesn't seem to fit that role. When he was playing off the bench initially, it seems so awkward. I don't know. It just didn't seem to fit with the bench unit. He just did seem to kind of mesh at all. I don't know if that's because he had his back up a little bit about. You know, his role and getting put there, or he just didn't blend well with the players that were there. So, yeah, it's a little bit sad. Yeah, he's kind of just Evan Fournier. You know, he came as advertised, and you know, I don't think he's done any better or worse than what we expected. So, but yeah, I'm not that gutted to see him go if we can get something for him. But I don't think we should be. Attaching anything to get rid of him.
We're getting what we wanted, right? What the fan base wanted. You know, we're going all in on the youth movement, right? If you get rid of these two guys, you know, no player is under 30, is over 30 at that point. You know, and you know, this is what everybody wanted, you know, and we get to see how that translates. You know, everybody was always saying, you know, Deuce is gonna be this, Grimes is gonna be that. RJ is going to be this, you know, what all these guys could be. And, you know, we get a chance to see that. And so I kind of wonder if they just end up clearing out Fournier and Cam and Rose for just picks. And maybe they see a player, a young prospect, maybe that they really like in the draft and just say, here's five firsts, go, let's get this pick. You know, that seems to be the thinking here, you know, unless some superstar randomly kind of just decides to request out within, you know, the next 6 to 7 months. And, you know, I don't think there are any, you know, things always change. It's the NBA, but there aren't really any names right now that seem like they would request out. The only one, like, it seems like that whole operation in Minnesota might be crumbling, you know, as quickly as it's come together. You know, who knows what happens there, but by and large, there aren't really any high-level names that you're kind of looking at right now that are going to just demand a trade. So, you know, why not, you know, just try and see if you could amass all these picks and try and make a move for somebody similar to what they tried to do with Ivy in this past draft.
Fournier was signed, and he was what he was. And no one expected much more or much less. But the question is, the problem with Evan Fournier is Quentin Grimes, because nobody was expecting him to
about?
Be
Alex
this
expecting
good
it, man. What are you talking
this
about?
Quickly, because he demanded minutes. Yeah, but if anybody would tell Alex that or anyone who Grimes was going to be a starter in the second season or was demanding minutes the minute he was drafted,
especially for
saying,
a late
oh,
first,
that's crazy talk. It's this quickly above him and whatever this and the other. Exactly. So nobody was expecting it. And they looked at Grimes and looked at Fournier and said, okay, Grimes can shoot and can play defense. So, well, we got Fournier now. Great. It was basically what happened to Fournier is what happened with Obi.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we have an all-star in Julius
Randle
now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Shit. Okay. You keep both. Yeah. So we. And Fournier is movable, and I think Fournier and Cam Reddish will still be, after trading, they will still be teammates.
Yeah, the Lakers seem like the logical move. You know, the Lakers have no shooters, and, you know, they could use Cam's wing length, you know, on that team. They could definitely use Fournier's shooting, especially if they're going to continue to employ Russell Westbrook. So, you know, it's something like the Lakers feel like a natural target for both of those guys. So, you know, obviously the 15th in a couple days here, we'll see what happens.
I know this is going back over old ground, but I think with players like Fournier, that they were kind of brought on. I think the Tibbs way is more, I don't believe that Tibbs can't like develop and play young players. I think that's a bit of a myth, but I think the way he likes to do it is to be blended in with, you know, good solid vets as well.
Right.
And to be honest, that this is not just a Tibbs thing. This is the way that I kind of prefer it as well. That, you know, young players are kind of, if they're good enough, they'll play and they'll learn from the vets, especially when it comes to playoffs. And we're obviously hoping to be a playoff team. And, you know, the worry is that you go into the playoffs with all these young players and kind of nobody to kind of help them through it. You know, you look at guys like Derek Rose that have been a fantastic mentor to somebody like IQ and invaluable experience when it comes to playoffs and things like that. And I was a little bit sad to kind of see, you know, just all the vets kind of, I think it's just become a dirty word round about Knicks Twitter, especially that if you're over 25, then you know you need to get out of there. Do you know, it's I just don't think it's the right way to build a successful team, is just to throw all these young guys out there and kind of expect them to do this, that, and the other. I think it's
the OKC model, right? It's what Houston and OKC are doing. You know, that's and you know that's not championship basketball. So.
The issue we have right now is that our young guys are getting into contract years, and we have to pay either the vets to play with the kids or to play with less kids or other kids, whatever, or we believe in the kids and pay them and let them play. I mean, it was one game, but I was when the game against the Kings, when Brunson was hurt all over. I would hate to have Brunson's body today. That must be sore everywhere. And when Randall got ejected, and there were like 9 minutes or 10 minutes to go in the fourth, I was thinking, this might go sour quickly. Because the Kings got all rallied up, but the way that those guys played, and there were the kids out there, they played really, I mean, they weren't flashy on offense, scoring another 40 points or anything else, but they were playing really good, competent basketball. That, okay, quickly, with the lineup of quickly, McBride, RJ, who I loved in that fourth quarter, the way he took over and was able to move the ball as well, not turning it over like a dumbass, thankfully. Mitch they got fouled out, but played really well as well. And Grimes and Quickly, so I think I mentioned them all. So I like the way we play there. We played really balanced game. I bet props to Tibbs because he was yelling his lungs out there, just giving instructions everywhere. So props to him. So that's what we want to see. Man, I much rather win playing those young kids than being in purgatory, like we talked a few weeks ago, being in purgatory with low 20s than being in purgatory with 30s. And no disrespect to the guys in the 30s, because I'm 31, so I'm not disrespecting myself. But it's like, it's sports. It's like, this is it. Rather lose or be in the playoffs with a young team than being in the playoffs like the exactly what we talked with me and Omar. It's different, this Knicks team, to lose in the first round than the Bulls team. Like, they're getting older. The Bulls team is getting older. We are getting older as well, but our getting older is good.
Yeah, I'm not talking about like a whole roster of old guys like the Bulls have, but it's more just like, you know, a player here and there just to kind of, you know, bring that experience when crunch time happens, you know, and it's, they don't have to play big minutes either. It's just, you know, you can have guys like that. They can just play, you know, minutes here and there just to kind of along.
I mean, it seems like the solution to both of your guys' query here is get a veteran wing player off that comes off the bench, you know, and find one of those guys and, you know, who's going to accept that mentorship role and not look for a bunch of shots or a bunch of minutes or whatever the case may be. And, you know, just target that type of a player. And it doesn't mess up with the minutes that you're going to give Deuce and Grimes and Quickly and all these guys. And that seems to be the kind of the path, because, you know, you got I feel like when you acquired Evan Fournier, you acquired him to kind of be one of the focal points to kind of take the offensive load off of Julius's shoulders. Yeah, it didn't work, you know, but, you know, acquiring a guy who's coming in 15 minutes a game just to provide some wing depth along, you know, for RJ or whatever is a totally different scenario, you know, and still prioritizes development, but still gets that guidance that you were kind of talking about, Alex. So that's what I would look for them to do. You know, right now, off the top of my head, can't give you a name. You know, like I thought about Tate the other day, just because I think I caught like a couple Rockets games on League Pass because I'm a degenerate. And, you know, so I was just kind of like, okay, you know, maybe this is a guy that the Knicks can target, because the Rockets themselves, if you're looking for young talent, they kind of have an overflow, you know, because they have there's only one basketball situation going on over there in Houston, you know, between Porter and, Smith and Green, you know, all these guys they have, and Şengün even, you know, so
I thought it was interesting what RJ said last night about the ejection. He just said, you know, we've got to be better, and, you know, we need to step in as a team to, you know, once the first technical comes, you know, we need to get Randall out of there, you know, and that's the sort of thing that a good solid vet will recognize, you know. Just
no, I mean, it's not like Julius is 21, Alex. No, I know, he's 28, you know.
28.
All I'm saying is, you know, yeah, if he's gone off, then somebody, a vet, can just step in and just say, look, I'll get him out there, you know, and spot the red mist coming and, you know, step in before it gets really nasty.
I mean, you don't need a vet to do that. You just need to be collected. You just need to, okay, Randall's like this, let's stop him. RJ knows, they know him, so they know he's going to explode. I mean, go at him. He punches you. Well, he doesn't get a tech. Just he doesn't need to be an old guy coming off the bench to be there to keep Randall in check. Everybody can keep anyone else in check.
I think, like, Jalen is the guy to do that, to be honest. I think Brunson is mature enough, and I think Julius respects him enough to, you know, not to say he doesn't respect RJ or anybody else, but yeah, I think he looks at Brunson as kind of like his co-captain there, right? You know, and that he would probably, it looked like Jalen was trying to get him calm a little bit before the second tech, but you know, it was at that point it was too late. The lid had already flown off, you know. So but Julius has to be better about that. I mean, there's no denying that he's too important to this team right now. He's, you know, one of their top scoring options, and probably their best defensive rebounder, like we mentioned earlier. So you gotta know what's at stake there and not get yourself tossed. It didn't cost us yesterday against the Kings, but, you know, down the road, you know, that could be something that does cost us games, right? So let's take a look at some game picks here. So Rafa, you know, you had exactly right last week, like you mentioned at the top. This week, kind of a weird schedule. So three road games, two of them in Chicago. In the same week, very strange. I haven't seen that too much in the time I've watched the NBA. So two games against the Bulls in Chicago and one game against the Pacers in Indiana. So what do you guys think? How's the team going to go?
Pacers, who are not a tanking team right now, actually above us in the standings, or equal with us in standards. But the Bulls, hard to predict the Bulls at the moment. I would really go back and watch the end of the Hawks game from last night. It was incredible. You know, they're just that team. I don't know if it's my my heart kind of leading my head or whatever, but when I watch the Bulls, I'm just constantly wanting bad things to happen to them, that sometimes I can't think logically. That, you know, they do have a good roster. Yeah, it's a bit old, but they still got some really good players in there. So sometimes when it clicks, it looks great. But yeah, I'd hope to at least take one out of those two. And then, yeah, I think the Pacers are kind of punching above their weight a wee bit at the moment. So I'll go 2-1 with one of the losses in Chicago.
Same for me. Two wins, one loss. It would be really, really tough to beat the Bulls back-to-back in Chicago, even if they're a worse team or not or whatever. It's back-to-back games, right? It can be hard to win, and so we'll split those games and beat the Pacers as well.
Yeah, I'm going to make it a clean sweep, 2-1 as well. I think it's really hard to beat a team two times in a row. And yeah, I feel like these teams are pretty evenly matched, all things considered. And yeah, I think splitting that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I don't know. I wonder about the Pacers. I mean, they've looked pretty good. You know, Mathurin has looked great. You know, I feel like he's in the running right there for Rookie of the Year. Halliburton, of course, has looked awesome. They still, you know, it seems like Rick Carlisle is really kind of figuring some things out there in Indiana. And yeah, but I think we could take a win from them. You know, I feel like we've done pretty well against the Pacers the past couple of years. So looking, hoping for a win there. You know, I think Julius could be primed for a pretty big game against the Pacers, considering their rotation and their lineup.
And Bulls as well.
Yeah, and the Bulls. Hopefully that continues. I mean, it'd be great if we could win all three, right?
Who's out for the Bulls these days? Is it just Lonzo that's out?
I think Dosunmu and Caruso are day-to-day right now. But as far as like long-term injuries, it's just Lonzo. You know, one little bit of housekeeping before we close out the episode is, if you follow us on Twitter or if you subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, you will see that we have a new logo. So new logo that's designed from our friend Kristen, who's a really talented graphic designer, and she put together our new logo. You know what it kind of reminded me for a second? Do you guys remember the old Sonics logos from like the late 90s? When they did the redesign when they were in the finals against the Bulls, and they had kind of like the ball going around the Space Needle in the logo. It kind of reminded me a little bit of that. But definitely big thanks to Kristen for that rebrand. You know, it's just a nice update on what we already had. And if you follow us on Twitter, you'll see that and a new cover photo as well. Speaking of, definitely follow us on Twitter at WWKnicksPodcast. Where Rafa mentioned the refs no less than 10 times during the game yesterday. I counted.
Oh, my God.
I was curious, you know, because, like, I opened up my personal timeline and I saw at Worldwide Knicks something about the refs. And I was like, man, how many times does this dude say something about the refs?
It's like, have you seen the game? Did you see it?
Look, you know me, man. You know how ridiculous. You know me. I don't say shit about the refs. They're a part of the equation. That's always been my stance. And I feel like I've wavered on takes over time, right? Like over the time we've all known each other, you know, we'll all change our opinions on things. One of the things I've always been resolute in, I never blame the refs for a loss. I never blame anything on the refs because to me, they're part of the variable. You know, they're in the equation. You know, it is what you got to deal with. It. You know, it's just, it is what it is. But
you can blame refs.
I mean, sure, you can do whatever refs. You want. I'm just telling you my personal preference. You know, I've never been one to blame.
Clyde refs. Was talking about what the refs get paid, thinking it was quite impressive in the commentary last night. And it's just, it's something that I always thought with in football or soccer that you're just like, unless you're at the very, very top, then the pay, why anybody would want to become a ref at the lower levels in any sport, just the abuse you get, you're just like, why would you? I
used to know somebody that
still does referee at a kind of lower level in Scottish football, and I used to say to him, I'm just like, why, you know, and it was always just like, oh, you know, it was something my dad did, so it just naturally came past, and you're just like,
Man, like during the World Cup, you saw that, like after the was the Uruguay match to close the group stage, like literally the whole team went in to kind of like confront this ref. Like, I do not want any parts of that existence, man. Like, yeah, like everybody on social media hates you, especially as you get higher up into like bigger professional leagues and stuff like that.
Even if you have a good game, you're just like, nobody talks about you. It just means that.
Yeah, like you're good if nobody's saying anything. So you never get any praise, and you're always getting mentioned when you're getting shit on, you know, and it's just like, it's literally the worst possible existence. And like, you know, the refs this year are wearing the TB patch for Tony Brown, who passed away. And you know, it's just like, imagine like spending, you know, 20 plus years officiating NBA games. It's just crazy, you know, and it's not for many. I'll tell you that, man. It's like look at yesterday. You got like this rookie ref from Queens. I remember Breen mentioned it on the broadcast. You got big ass 6'8" Julius Randle all up in your grill, yelling at you for like 5 minutes. You know, like imagine
come to the league, man.
That,
the
yeah, imagine ref, that's like
the
your job.
Refs all get the you know, the sexist stuff as well, and the sexist abuse. And it's just like,
yeah.
Rather than me.
Yeah, it's no good. No good at all. So now that we're off of that quick little ref tangent, also, if you enjoy the podcast and you enjoy those types of tangents, be sure to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. It goes a long way to helping us get more discoverability for the pod. So on behalf of Alex and Rafa, this is Omar checking out another episode of Worldwide Knicks, and we'll catch you guys next week.